G'day, I'm Eric, and welcome to episode 366 of ErkPod 3, episode 366. It is Tuesday, the 19th of June, 2012. I've just finished work at my place of employment for the evening. And a little bit of housekeeping first. I actually recorded episode 365, but I haven't put it out yet. I've been meaning to put it out for a few days, but I haven't for one reason or another. So even though you may be hearing this very close to when episode 365 was put out, the actual time that passed is a lot longer. But the reason why I'm recording this episode now, as a cat crosses my path as I leave the depot, wonder where these cats come from. It's all industrial area over here. There are houses across the road, but the little cat's had a bit of an epic adventure to get here, and I've had a bit of an epic adventure to get to the point where I'm at. Because as of today, Tuesday the 19th of June, I've been told that I'm officially clear for, I was going to say pre-injury, but that's not the case. I'm now fully fit for my regular duties as a train driver. And of course, usual disclaimer here. But let me just say, woohoo! And I'm back, bitches, to quote Shauna. I'm sure that's what Shauna would say if he was in my situation. I'm recording a podcast, and yeah, he would say, I'm back, bitches, and yeah, I am back. Got the good news this afternoon when I signed on. I went upstairs to sign my attendance book and to say hi to the management team and that sort of stuff. And my manager says, dude, I've got some good news for you. And every time I'd see him, I'd be like, hey man, have you got some good news for me? And usually I'd be like, nah, haven't heard. But today he was able to tell me that basically I'm back on the road. And it's funny because when I say I'm back on the road, I don't think anything of it, because it's a bit of slang that train drivers have been using and other people on the railways have been using for decades. Road meaning track, it's the same basic thing. So if we talk about road knowledge, we're basically talking about track knowledge, or if we're talking about being on the road or off the road, we're talking about driving or not driving, as the case may be. I've been off the road since November last year. I'm now back on as of tomorrow, as I record, Wednesday the 20th of June. And so, yeah, it's been a good 6-8 months. 8 months since I've driven a train. For those who might be new, I'd just come back from a Europe trip last year. I'd been driving for about 6 weeks. And then I was told that I had severe sleep apnea. That's under control now. I'm using a CPAP machine. I was cleared at the start of April. So it's only taken over 2.5 months from the time that I was officially cleared by my specialist for the news to get to where it had to, within my place of employment. The final ironic thing about it was that an email was sent on the 1st of June telling who needed to know that I could go back to driving trains. However, my manager and I weren't told, and no one's rung me to say, hey mate, you're back on the trains. I found out today, the 19th of June, And so, therefore, for the last 18 days or so, I could have been driving trains. So, what does this mean now, apart from the fact that I'm terribly excited and it's going to feel like tomorrow is my first day at work again? And I should actually share in a moment what my actual first day of driving a train was actually like, because it's an interesting story. But as of tomorrow, and for the next week and a half at the very least, I will be with another driver. They call it the Buddy Program. So when you come back to work after a major incident or a long time off due to an injury or medical requirements or whatever, they team you with someone. And luckily for the next week and a half, I've been able to choose the people that I'll be driving with and also the people on the time of day that I'll be starting. So I was having a look at the rosters. First of all, looking for people that I know, there's over 200 drivers in my depot. I don't know them all. I don't know them all. Not all of them do the shifts that I want, the afternoons and the late afternoon shifts. So I'm trying to look for people that I know and then define people that I know on afternoons. And then what I'm basically doing is we're going to share the driving between the buddy and me, whoever that person may be. I've selected about 5 different people for the next week and a half. And so we'll share the driving. And I'm basically going over the road or over the track to refresh myself on things like signals, grades, locations of stations, powering and braking points, speed restrictions, infrastructure changes, all of that sort of thing. Because I haven't been in some of these areas for some time. In some areas, things haven't changed since the last time I've driven. Whereas in some of the areas, some of the infrastructure has changed dramatically. And the theory, which I agree with, is actually a good one. They probably don't want me looking out the window every 5 seconds, going, "Oh man, that's changed," and "Oh, I didn't know that was here." You know, that sort of thing there. Whereas if anything big has happened, I can look over it. I can, you know, share the duties. The driver who's with me can say, "Oh, okay, well, in this section, this has changed, that's changed," or whatever. And the people that I've picked are all people that I have a good relationship with. So there's nothing worse than, you know, basically doing that person's roster with them. And you could be on duty for anywhere between 7 and 8.5 hours, and you can't stand that person. Or, you know, the fact that you don't know them necessarily isn't a bad thing, but if you don't like them and you happen to be put with them for that amount of time, you know, that's not good. So over the next week and a half, at the very least, I'll be, you know, going over the different sections of track that I normally go over. And then at some point in the very near future, I'm going to have to do a driving assessment, which I'm due for anyway. We have a driving assessment once every 12 to 18... Oh, actually, no. In a 12 to 18 month period, we have a train preparation assessment where we basically demonstrate that we know how to get a train ready. We go for a driving assessment, basically so we can prove that we can drive a train correctly, etc. And then we have what they call a stabling assessment, which basically means that I know how to put the train to bed safely at night. And I know how to make sure that things that are wrong with the train get actioned when it goes out of service at the end of each day. So that's all coming up. So that's going to be good. I'm staying with my afternoons, of course, and it was good that I was actually able to choose, okay, these are the people I can go with, these are the times that I can start. So it's going to be great. I can't wait. I don't know how much sleep I'm actually going to get tonight, because I'll be waiting for... I'm starting a bit earlier. I think it's 10 past 11 in the morning tomorrow I'm starting. This is the thing with train driver rosters here in Sydney. We don't necessarily start at the same time each day, and we don't necessarily start at a common time. Whereas when I was working on the station a few weeks ago, if you were working on the afternoons, you might start at, say, 1 p.m. or start at 2 p.m. and then you'll work through the 8 hours until, you know, 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. at night. With my job, it's a lot different. For instance, tomorrow I'm starting at 11:10 in the morning. Whereas the day after, I think I'm starting at 11:22. And so that will be the actual time that's on the sheet. That will be the time that I'm actually supposed to start work, and every minute of my day is accounted for. You know, from that point until the end. And you're not always working a solid 8 hours. Sometimes you work seven and a half. You know, sometimes you work some odd ones like 7 hours 37, things like that, right up until 8 hours 33, which is the maximum that we can be rostered for. And so it's harder to get into a routine. Now, if you can manage to keep your starting times around about the same time every day, that's not necessarily a bad thing, whereas sometimes you can't do that because of the way the rosters are constructed. You might be an hour or two earlier or later. You know, your shifts might get later as the week goes on. They might get earlier as the week goes on. You could totally change from afternoons to mornings or vice versa within the period of that one fortnight. So it is going to be fun, that is for sure. I am going to enjoy it. I'll have to remember to make sure that I have my train keys with me tomorrow. I haven't needed them for so long. Even when I've been just working on the station or in the depot, I haven't needed the train keys. So I haven't taken them with me. So I'm going to have to remember that. I'm going to have to remember to take my bag with the equipment and documentation that I'm required to take with me. Oh, it's going to be fun. I can't wait. And it has been a long time. While I could have done without all the frustration, medically I feel better. Even though I didn't really think that I had a problem, the science is in, so to speak, and I do feel better for it. I know that I'm getting better sleep because of it, and now the test really begins to see how I go with the Sleepwalker 5000. That's the name I've given for my CPAP machine. It's going to be interesting to see how I cope with the different shifts, but then again, other people have coped. I have generally coped with the shift work. Generally speaking, there's only been about 3 or 4 days in the period of 18 years where I've just been too tired to go to work. But I should tell you, while I was talking about tomorrow and sort of comparing it to my first day of work, my first day of actually driving trains was quite interesting. When we're not actually driving trains, they have a shift called a standby shift. And what that basically allows is for people who don't have trains to drive, they sit around in strategic locations, basically waiting for something to go wrong. So a driver could be running late, he could be running late to work, or his train could be late, or whatever. And so rather than delaying the service and the passengers who are there, they'll put a standby driver on it instead, and they'll just keep on going until they're told, you know, they're basically told, okay, jump on this train, drive it to here, drive it back, whatever, do what you have to do. Sometimes a driver might need to be relieved because they're sick or they're injured or unfortunately they're involved in an incident, they could have to all of a sudden urgently need to go to the toilet. And sometimes you're on a train, on the one train, for nearly 5 hours at times. So you might need to go to the toilet urgently. And again, rather than delay the train, they put a standby driver on it and the train continues as normal. And so what they tend to do with the trainees, I had just graduated from train driver's school, and so I didn't have a place on the roster where I was to go, so they sent a whole heap of us up to platform 16, 17 at Central, and they just said wait there for a phone call. And so every time that the phone rang from the people who tell us where to go, the train crew assigner, you might want to think of him as a dispatch clerk or something like that. You know, they'll tell you where to go. And so every time the phone rang, there were a few of us actually itching to answer the phone, because sometimes they want to talk to a particular driver or they want to find a driver, they don't care who, and put them on a train. And so I'd heard stories of guys who have graduated from train driver school and then for days, weeks, months, not driven a train, or if they have, they haven't driven one very much. And by that point, I'd had 6 months... 6 months in the train driver's school driving with a driver trainer. And so I just wanted to get the first drive out of the way and done. So I've answered the call and they said, oh, can you go around the city circle? You should get relieved on the other side. That commonly happens if a driver needs to go to the toilet, for instance. And so what will happen, the train will come in, standby driver will get on, the regular driver will get off, the driver's got about 15 minutes to do what they have to do and then get to the other side of Central and then take the train back out to wherever it's going. But for some reason, I've taken the train around the city circle, and you know, it's a relatively easy section of track to drive in terms of speed. The speeds aren't high on the city circle, maximum 40 k's an hour. So you drive around there. You know, you have to remember some things, obviously, but in terms of sections to drive, it's not a bad low-speed section for your first ever drive around the city circle. So I've got around from Central Platform 17 around the Central Platform 22, and there was nobody waiting for me. So I've called up, and the driver's assigner said to me, oh, can you take the train into Everly and just stand by on the train? That train's now a standby train. Like standby drivers and standby guards, they also have standby trains for various reasons, at strategic points during the day. And so mine was due to stand by there for a while. So I've said, okay, no worries. And Everly's one of our maintenance centres. And so all of a sudden things just got harder, because, you know, Everly's an important place. It's got its things to watch out for as you're going in there. The speeds are low because it's a depot, but, you know, then again, you've got associated risks and everything, because there's a lot of lots of people around, cleaners, you know, maintainers, all that sort of stuff, other train crew that you have to watch out for, you know, other trains you have to watch out for. And so things just got stepped up a notch. So it's just near just near Redfern. If you've ever seen, if you're in Sydney and you're heading from the west and heading in towards Central, if you see the Channel 7 signs there at Australia Technology Park, that's basically where Everleigh is. So the so I've gone into there and I've parked the train where it's needed to be parked, and I've gone from one end of the train to the other to to come back when the standby stint's over. And I've gone into the bag and I've realised that the bag that I've got were all issued with safety vest orange work bags, and so the majority of the people have them. I've realised that I've picked up someone else's bag, because all of the stuff that's in there is stuff that I don't carry. You know, things like aspirins and safety glasses and Panadol and all that sort of stuff that was in there. So I've called the assigner again from Everleigh and I've said, if anybody rings you looking for their work bag, I've accidentally taken it to Everleigh. And I'm actually surprised that in some ways it doesn't happen more often, because you've got something like 1,500 drivers on the system. The majority of them use these orange bags, and, you know, I'd only just been issued with everything, and so I didn't have anything on my bag that signified that it was mine. So I've rung up, said, hey, just in case anyone's looking for it, it's here at Everleigh. So a little bit later on, well, that obviously means that the guy can't drive his train because he hasn't got his equipment. So a little bit later on, they've called me up and they said, oh, we want the train back at Sydney Terminal, the country platforms at Central, and the guy whose bag it is will meet you there to swap bags. So, okay, no worries. So, if anyone's done the trip or anyone's a rail fan, they'll know the trip that I'm talking about. From Everleigh to Sydney Terminal, you basically have to go under a tunnel which goes underneath all the train tracks, and then you end up on the other side of Central. And then to make things even more interesting, we weren't parking the train at a platform, we were parking in between two platforms. So that was a very interesting first experience. So I parked the train there, the guy's come and collected his bag off, you know, apologised, and I'm like, dude, it's my first day. I just grabbed the wrong bag. And so to prevent that from happening again, I've gone to the luggage shop, which coincidentally is no longer there, and I've got a, there was an Australian flag patch that I got, and there was also a boxing kangaroo patch that I got. Put them on my bag, wrote my name on it in Texter, which of course, with the benefit of hindsight, I should have done from day one. Well, I sort of kind of did it on day one. And then from that point on, I could always tell which bag mine was. And I never had that sort of drama again. But yeah, and after that, I had basically waited around until home time. But the thing was, on my very first day of driving trains, I was given a job so I could actually drive the train. So I wasn't going to be one of these people who was just driving around. More to the point, one of these people who were waiting to drive around. And they were waiting and they were waiting, and since then they've acknowledged that to keep your skill level up and to keep your enthusiasm up, especially if you've been in the school, it was 6 months for me, but now I believe it's 12 months straight off the street especially. If you've been waiting for this moment for, you know, 6 to 12 months, or in my case, my whole life, waiting for my very first day of driving a train by myself, and then you have to wait around for, you know, even a day or, you know, a week, a month, months people have waited. And so what they've said now that they'll try and do is, if they know it's someone's first day, they will pull someone off their normal diagram and say, okay, former trainee driver Fred Bloggs, whose first day it is today, you will drive part of this roster. So you're basically getting your backside in the seat and just driving, because you want to go out. The majority of drivers, they just want to go out and they want to get their first job under their belt. And even if it's an unspectacular job or unspectacular route, as I did, well, it started out unspectacular, but due to my screw up and due to where I actually had to go, it was a bit more memorable. I think you always tend to remember your first day in that sort of situation. Now, I don't necessarily remember mine as a guard, because it wasn't that special. Wasn't that important. I didn't really do much of my first job as a guard solo. A friend of mine, her first night as a train guard was actually New Year's Eve. When I was in train guard school, the day that we officially were accepted as train guards and graduated was Christmas Eve. It was Christmas Eve 2001 for me. And so they gave us all Christmas Day off, Boxing Day. I think I did a couple of shifts in the period between Christmas Day and New Year's Eve. But my friend, she took some time off and went up the coast to see her family. And so she was coming back for her first shift on New Year's Eve. Now, if you've never spent a New Year's Eve in Sydney, it is quite hectic. You get a lot of people travelling in from the suburbs in towards the city, the harbour, Circular Quay, the Rocks, and you get thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not over a million people in and around that harbour shore, that harbour side, foreshore sort of area, to see the fireworks and to have a good time for New Year's Eve. And when New Year's Eve is actually a working day, you pretty much, in some respects, have four peak periods. You have your morning, regular morning peak. You have your regular afternoon peak. So your regular morning peak to the city, your regular afternoon peak from the city, and then from, you know, 6 o'clock onwards, you're getting another peak hour heading towards the city. And then you have a bit of a spurt at about 9 p.m. because they have fireworks in the harbour at 9 p.m. for all the families and all the soft cocks that don't want to stay up until midnight. And then after midnight they have the midnight fireworks, and then after that a lot of people go home at all sorts of hours into the morning, and the trains for that day basically run all night. And so that New Year's Eve shift, I actually did a fair bit of running around. I did a fair bit of running around. I ended up at Hornsby, taking a passenger service to Hornsby. I ended up out at Blacktown. I ended up bringing an empty one back in from Blacktown from memory. And then my friend and I, who started at the same time, 10 p.m, we both caught the 6 o'clock Blue Mountains train home. And even though it was New Year's Eve, they had the 4 a.m. train. They didn't put on an extra train between the normal 4:02 and then it was the 6:02. So there were a lot of people waiting around for that 6:02, And because it was now a public holiday and it was New Year's Day, it wasn't a long train, it was a four carriage train, and so it was a Blue Mountains train up the Lithgow. And so there were people who were sleeping in luggage racks and all of this sort of stuff, generally passed out, and my friend and I and a few others, we were in with the driver on our journey home. And yeah, that was a long day, but it was a good day of, and especially for my friend, she was out there doing stuff, and you know, she was a bit worried of how she went, and so on the train on the way into Sinon, we caught the train together, and we were revising, you know, what do you do in this situation, that sort of thing, and she's doing fine, last I heard. So that's absolutely awesome. But, you know, first days are very interesting. Mine will happen tomorrow as I'm recording this. What I will do to complete the episode is that I'll come back. I'll come back and I'll tell you basically what happened on my first day, because there will be some people who will be interested. But now, before I pause this part of the recording, now would be a good time to thank everybody for all of their support that they've given me, either in person, Facebook, Twitter, social networks, whatever. You know, when they've seen me, I have had some really good support out there. You know, lots of well wishes and all of that sort of stuff. And there have been some people who have the same condition that I do, sleep apnea, or related conditions where they use a CPAP machine, who have given me lots of advice and support, and to reassure me basically that you can cope. I know there were some people who were concerned when I found out that I wouldn't cope and I wouldn't be able to drive a train again. And I knew that there were people who do have sleep apnea, who have got treated, who are being treated, and drive trains. And I just wanted to be another one of them. If I do leave driving trains, and I've been a driver now for over 7 years. If I do decide to move on and do something else, and I know I've thought about it from time to time, I want to go out on my terms. I don't want to go out because I've had an incident and I'm not allowed to drive trains again, or this medical issue. I don't want to go out like that. I want to go out on my terms. It's what I've wanted to do since I've been a little kid. When I joined the railways, my goal was to drive a train, be a driver. You know, it took me some time to do it. I joined the job in 1994, and I started driving trains. I graduated as a train driver in 2005, so that's 11 years. However, having said that, I could have done it earlier, of course. You know, there are ways to do it quicker than that, but I was having a good time doing what I was doing in my different jobs. But because this is the job that I want to do and I want to stick at and I want to keep doing, I will basically do it for as long as I can, but as long as I've got, you know, even though I might complain from time to time, oh man, I'm driving this train for so long, blah, 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 you know, or this happened or that happened or whatever, but let's face it, it's what I want to do, it's what I love doing. It's not the only thing that I identify myself as, although, of course, if most people say to me, oh, what do you do for a job? Well, I answer them. I'm a train driver. That is my job. That is what puts the food on the table, so to speak. That's what pays the bills. it's definitely not podcasting, even though having said that, there are some great benefits with podcasting. Being paid a shitload of money isn't one of them. You know, and for those top 1% or whatever it is of podcasters who do earn a living doing podcasting, and that's what they do, the Todd Cochrans of the World, Geek News Central, Raw Voice, Blueberry, Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast Answer Man, Leo Laporte, you know, those sort of blokes, who manage to do, make themselves a living through podcasting, good on them, that's awesome. I love driving trains. I love doing my volunteer work with the New South Wales Rural Fire Service. But trade driving is what I've wanted to do. And out of all the jobs that I've had on the railway, this has given me, obviously, the most job satisfaction. And I've stayed in it the longest time. There are places that I can go after this. For instance, I could go and be a driver trainer. I could be a manager of drivers or a supervisor of drivers. I can go into rostering. I can go into the crew support sections. I don't want to do any of that. I want to keep driving. And the fact that I can drive trains again after this medical issue, in a way it is like starting again. And, of course, you know, have to just take one day at a time and let the days flow into weeks, into months. But I'll be back. As Shauno would say, I'm back, bitches. And so, you know, that of course is meant in the greatest respect. And I will be back after this to tell you about my first day back. If you want to find out more, check out channelegg.com back soon. Welcome back to episode 366 of EggPod. Coming to you after my very first train driving shift of the year. Yeah, it was interesting. It was very, very interesting. I arrived at work. I had my long weekend that I'm having this weekend confirmed. Because I've been working Monday to Friday for a few weeks now, I desperately need to put my car in for a service. And the place where I put it in to get serviced usually does their big times to do services on Monday to Friday. I believe they're open Saturdays as well, but they're hard to get into on a Saturday. And plus, sometimes I have other commitments with the fire brigade. So I said to my manager, can I have this Friday off as my ADO, my accumulated day off? You know, we agreed to that like last week or the week before. No, last week. So he said, okay, that's fine, no worries. So what he got me to do, as I think I mentioned in the earlier part, was to write down who I wanted to go with when and give it to him as a plan. He looked at my plan yesterday, agrees with it, and so this will go on for the rest of this week, which is basically tomorrow, and then all of next week, and then it will probably have to continue depending on how much of the network I can cover and when I feel comfortable. And as I mentioned earlier, I have to do a driving assessment as well. So I've also had some annual leave confirmed for July, and the reasons for that I'll tell you shortly. Because, yeah, I'll tell you that shortly. Anywho, I had to pick up my first train at Central, and then I went around the city circle, and it felt really good. It reminded me, in a way, and I was telling my buddy that I was with, it reminded me of my very first day of driving again, except I didn't have anyone sitting next to me 7 years ago. And so we were just talking and stuff like that, and he was just reminding me of critical points. But if you do what I do on a daily basis, you know, a lot of the things become automatic. Of course, there are some things that you would forget about at this, for that amount of time that I haven't done it. But, you know, it is so automatic that a lot of things you just know, even though you don't haven't done them for 8 months. Things I just know. So I went around the city circle, out on the airport line to Kingsgrove, and then he took over from Kingsgrove to Rouseby, back to Kingsgrove. I went back into Central. The main reason I got him to do the Reevesby bit, Kingsgrove to Reevesby and back, is that they're actually putting an additional two lines in between Kingsgrove and Reevesby to make it four tracks. Now, do I really need to know? I'm on Parramatta Road at Auburn. Do I need to know about an accident, which I know because I heard it on the news, is a fatal, at Bell's Line around Road at Mount Tomar? Do I really need to know about that at Auburn? Really? I'm in Auburn, heading west. Mount Tomar's towards the northwest, past Richmond. Do I need to know that? Maybe once I get onto the M4 and I'm coming up to the Penrith exit, and if I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go Bell's Line of Road to get to Lithgow, well, I might want to stay on the Great Western Highway through Katoomba and Mount Victoria and go that way. But here in downtown Auburn, I don't know if I need to know that. So, yeah, what they're doing, they're putting an additional two tracks in, one track in each direction, between Kingsgrove and Reevesby. That will join up with the two express tracks that are already there between Torella and Beverly Hills. And so, when the lines are built, you will have a line where you leave from Walleye Creek or Sydenham, and then because there's no station platforms down the express line, your next stop will be Reevesby. So that will be a big saving on journey times to the southwest. So because of the amount of construction work that was going on around that area, I wanted to look for myself. Rather than thinking, oh my God, this has changed, and that's changed, and that's changed. I just wanted to be able to concentrate on the changes and let the other guy drive. And as an indication of what's changed, in many of the areas, there wasn't overhead wiring 8 months ago. There wasn't fully formed track. Some of the track was there, but it wasn't ballasted or anything like that. And now they've got signals up. They've got new signals up for both the current track and also for the new track that aren't in service yet. So there's all these things to look out for. And so I was rather glad for that first time that I had someone who could actually concentrate on the driving, and I could just look out and look at all these changes. I was able to have a long meal break, which was always good. Went to KFC, had some KFC, went for a bit of a walk around the city, played a bit of tourist in my own city, which was cool. Got a reasonable shot. I wish I had been just a little bit closer, maybe. There were two fire engines reversing into the City of Sydney fire station that I would have liked to have been a bit closer to when I took the photo, but wasn't too bad. They were doing, they were both reversing in at the same time, so some precision reversing there from those guys. Got some monorail shots, because I don't know if you've heard, but we're actually getting rid of our monorail in the centre of Sydney that runs between the city centre and Darling Harbour. And so the state government have decided, no, we don't want it anymore. It's too costly. It's holding back construction in the city. They actually want to knock down our entertainment centre and rebuild it. And the monorail runs right past the entertainment centre. So they're thinking, well, the monorail carriages are getting towards the end of their service life. So rather than building new monorail carriages and the like, well, they're just going to tear the thing down and take back the room that the monorail is taking up. An interesting story about the monorail, actually. I remember it was, I think, 1984. I know some of you might not have been born, the younger listeners, 1984. I would have been about 10. And they were proposing the monorail because it was, from memory, it was a bicentennial project for when Darling Harbour opened up as a tourist area for the bicentenary in 1988. And at that time in Penrith, the High Street Mall was being constructed and it was opened. And I actually got to meet the then Premier of New South Wales, Neville Wran. And I don't even know how I got to introduce myself to him, but I just said something like, oh, I really like your plans for the monorail. And then he shook my hand, and then one of the local newspapers actually took my photo and then come up to me and got my name and all this sort of stuff. And they actually misquoted me because they said that I said that I don't like the mall, but I think the monorail's pretty cool or something like that. I think the monorail is good. It is expensive. It is more of a tourist thing rather than a decent public transit option. You know, it's more of a fun thing if you're going down to Darling Harbour or whatever. Now that they've got the light rail, by the way, when it was built in, I think, 1997, it was rebuilt because there was nothing. And so they rebuilt a line from Central Station down past parts of Darling Harbour to Star City Casino. And so that was privately owned, and then eventually the company who owns the light rail brought the monorail, and now it's quite ironic, actually, the government are buying out the light rail because they also own the trains, etc., that I drive. And they also own a lot of the buses in the Sydney area, under Sydney Buses. So they've brought out the owners of the light rail so they can integrate it into our system a bit better. And one of the conditions of that sale was that the monorail has to stop trading, basically. But on the other hand, they've just privatised the ferries. So there's a conglomerate of companies who will be very shortly running Sydney ferries, even though the name's not going to change, the fares aren't going to change, and in the short term the vessels aren't going to change. But that'll be a private consortium with government subsidy. There's going to be all sorts of re-tendering for the bus services. All of the buses will be owned by the government, and then they'll be contracted. The services in each area will be contracted out to different companies. So lots of interesting things happening in transport, but sort of getting off track of my first day. So yeah, had a great first day. It was great to be able to get back into the seat and, just get in the train and go, basically. And it was a pretty good day. We ended up on our last train 15 minutes late. So my day got extended by 18 minutes by the time I finished. So what was an 8-hour 13-day now becomes like an 8-hour 30-day. Tomorrow's an easy day, and then I've got the long weekend, and then back to work on Monday with some more trains. So yeah, it's rather cool. So I'm really glad to be back. I didn't drive the whole day. We shared the driving between us. So that was rather cool. And, you know, getting to see some of the areas that I haven't been for a while is pretty cool. Anywho, I mentioned a bit earlier that I've got some annual leave in July. And the reason why I initially asked for that annual leave, and I had that confirmed today, was that on the 14th of July, I've already mentioned this on Erk FM, on the 14th of July, I'm going up to Dead of Winterfest in Brisbane, and that is a massive afternoon and evening of hard rock, metal, glam rock, psychobilly, lots of different forms of rock, metal, glamcore, all that sort of stuff. There's a bit of burlesque there. So there's over 40 bands on 5 stages. And so I've actually got myself a media pass where I'll be able to get into the event for free, do interviews, all of that sort of stuff. So that was my initial plan. My initial plan was to go up there for that weekend and then maybe hang out in Brisbane or whatever for a week or so, come back, and that'll be all cool. And then after I announced plans for that on the interweb, that's the Saturday the 14th of July, I was going to leave for Brisbane on the Friday the 13th of July, because the previous night in at Fox Studios, Western Australia indie band Carnival were playing. So I've got tickets for that already that I booked months ago, because with Carnival you have to book early, because they will sell out. So that's the 12th. Plan is go into the city, get a hotel, see Carnival on the 12th, fly out to Brisbane on the 13th, the Dead of Winter Festival's on the 14th, a few days up there, come back. But that's been changed. Still going to Carnival on the 12th. On the 13th, I'm actually flying to the Gold Coast instead of Brisbane. And really, in train terms, bus terms, car terms, there's only a couple of hours difference between Sydney, Brisbane and the Gold Coast. So I will fly to the Gold Coast instead. I've been invited to a gig by Rare Breed Records. They're doing an album launch on the Friday the 13th on the Gold Coast, so I'll be at that. VIP entry into that. And then the next day will be Dead of Winterfest. And then I thought, I could spend a few days in Brisbane or the Gold Coast or wherever. And then I thought, oh, I could fly to New Zealand. I remember one time in 2006, before I actually started ErkPod, I went up to the Gold Coast to see the Indy race cars and also the V8 supercars race on the Gold Coast. And then I was flying over to Perth to see the very last Rally Australia in Perth. And so I flew from Sydney to the Gold Coast. I stayed on the Gold Coast for about a week. And then I went to Brisbane on the day of the flight, flew over to Perth, which took about 4.5 hours. And then I stayed in Perth for a while. And then after Perth, I actually went up to Carnarvon on the northwest coast, and then I came back to Perth, came back to Sydney. On that flight over, it was a nighttime flight. It was due to leave Brisbane at about 7:30, 8:30, something like that at night. So it was a night flight, so to speak. And you get in, supposed to get into Perth at about 1 o'clock in the morning local time there. Actually, might have left Brisbane a bit later. Might have left Brisbane about 9:30, something like that. And I remember I was uncomfortable. I couldn't do anything because a lot of the passengers were asleep. I was peeling because I got severely sunburned on the Gold Coast. You know, out of the Indy racetrack for 4 days, not undercover, no sunscreen. So I was peeling, and I remember saying to a flight attendant who was in the back at one stage, I'm like, oh man, this flight seems to be dragging on forever. And she says, well, you know by now you'd be in New Zealand. Now, of course, New Zealand's very close to us. It's about 3 hours flying time away from Sydney or Brisbane. And I've never been. I know Kiwis. I've watched a lot of Kiwi shows on TV. I've met Kiwi bands, but I've never been there. So I thought this year I have to change that. And so from Brisbane, where I'm going to, I am flying on the Monday from Brisbane to Auckland, and then I'm a few days in Auckland, and then basically a day and a half in Queenstown, and then back to Sydney. So I'm basically away for about a week. And so I'll have to make sure that the music shows are recorded, and I'll just record an egg pod while I'm out and about. An egg pod or two I'll record while I'm out and about over there. So that's basically the 14th to the 22nd of July, which is going to be a great. Another couple of stamps for the passport. And I thought I should try and rack up some frequent flyer miles, because I see a few people doing it, and I didn't really think of doing frequent flyer miles because I was flying with all these different alliances and that, and no-cost carriers last year. So what happened the other day, I tried to sign up for an Etihad frequent flyer card, because I had that scheme recommended to me, and they co-share with Virgin. They also co-share frequent flyer points with Air New Zealand, Malaysia Airlines, JAL, American, and a few others. So I thought, yeah, that's cool. Get some frequent flyer miles up. So I'm flying Sydney to the Gold Coast on Virgin, catching a train to Brisbane, and then flying to Auckland, Queenstown, and back to Sydney on Air New Zealand. So all of those miles should count for Etihad. I tried to sign up to Etihad the other day, and it kept on saying to me, you know, we have an error. I'm just coming up to some roadworks. There's an error. We can't process your thingy, your enrolment. That's the word I was looking for. We can't accept your enrolment at the time because we're having problems. Oh, they're just starting to put the codes out now for the overnight roadwork. We're having trouble, blah blah blah. So I thought I'll ring the customer help desk. So I rang the customer help desk. I was online. I was on hold with them for about 20 minutes, and then it says, there is a fault. Goodbye. And so it hung up on me. So I left it go a bit longer, waited on hold for about another 10 minutes. And then I spoke to the woman, and she says, oh no, we can't help you. We're not technical support. And I says, well, can you sign me up on over the phone? She says, no, just go back to the website in a couple of hours. We're having problems. So I thought, okay, I'll ditch that idea and I'll get the Virgin one. And I used to have Virgin points, but I didn't do many trips on it. I think I only did one trip to Melbourne and back, so my membership lapsed. So I tried to sign up with them again, and it said a similar sort of thing, get to the last step, no, we can't process it. Too many redirects, it said, so we can't process it. So I rung their helpline, and they said, yeah, we're having problems too. And I said, well, is your system linked to Etihad? And she says, yeah. So I says, well, if Etihad are having troubles, you are as well. And she says, yeah, that's right. So when I got home a couple hours later, I thought, well, I'll sign up for Etihad again. And it worked. I got my membership number and everything like that. And then after I signed up with Etihad, I checked my email to get those details. And then I got an email from Virgin saying, congratulations, you've signed up successfully for our program. So I'm now enrolled in two frequent flyer programs, Etihad and Virgin, even though they're part of the same group. You can only fly on certain, with the Etihad card, you can only get certain trips on Virgin credited. So for those trips that I can't get credited on Virgin, I get them done on Etihad, or vice versa. So it's probably not a bad thing to have two cards and sort of see how I go. But the way I look at it, I work hard with the podcasting and that, and also with the fire brigade and with work. I'm basically doing two or three jobs. So why not every now and again just, you know, go somewhere just to relax? And I thought, well, I haven't been to New Zealand this week. It'd be just a good taste of it. And then I could say, oh, I might decide, you know, a few days in Auckland. I think, well, you know, that might be enough. Or, okay, well, you know, next time I won't go to Auckland, I might go to Christchurch or Wellington. The main reason, well, there's two reasons I went to Queenstown. And the reason that I went to Queenstown was because, A, it was a longer flight from Auckland to Queenstown rather than Auckland, Christchurch or Auckland, Wellington. And then the second one was when I went to Canberra last time and I went on the simulator at Flight Experience. One of the trips that I did was flying into Queenstown. So I thought, yeah, that'd be interesting to check out the landing on that. By the way, thanks to my buddy Albert for telling me he knows I've been on the flight simulator at Flight Experience in Sydney, and so has he. There's actually a new one in Katoomba next to the Edge Theatre, which is called VSJet, vsjet.com.au. And unlike the one at Flight Experience, this one is supposed to be a 737 full motion simulator. So I'm looking forward in the future to trying that one out, and I'll obviously report back and tell you all about that. So that's an interesting one. Interesting that, however, this one in Sydney, Flight Experience, they've got full permission from Boeing to call it a Boeing 737, and they've also got full permission from CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority here in Australia, the Australian equivalent to the FAA in America. You can use that as part of your hours on instruments and all of that sort of stuff if you are a commercial pilot. This one at Katoomba, apparently you can claim hours for instrument with CASA, but I don't think that Boeing has given them permission to use the Boeing 737 name. They only call themselves a 737 type simulator, not a Boeing 737. So that's going to be interesting, just coming up to some more roadworks. Normally, lately, when I've been coming through here, it's been a bit earlier and the roadworks haven't started. But because I'm a little bit later tonight, they have started. So I might not actually be able to get off at my exit. So it just looks like we might actually be lucky. I think they're just in the middle of putting out their traffic cones and setting up what they want to set up for the evening. They actually want to close this left lane that I'm in now, but they're in the middle of putting the cones up. So I might be lucky. I might actually be able to exit here, because I know this week they've been wanting to do this exit, the Northern Road exit, and basically they're in the middle of resurfacing this section of the M4 that I'm on. and say they've been doing that for a... well, that was a noticeable drop. They've been doing it for a few weeks now. So I believe this week they want to work on the exit and entry ramps here at the Northern Road. I might be lucky. By now they should have... If they were going to close this ramp, they would have had a sign up by now. So I think I might be lucky. So I'm looking forward to New Zealand. Of course, I will be taking you with me. Northern Road off-ramp closed 21st. Well, today's... Ah, so that'll be closed tomorrow night. No. The 21st. Saturday. No. Thursday. Today's the 20th, I think. Well, I'll just cross that bridge when I come to it. They'll have a sign up anyway. Just depends on what time I go through. So, I'm looking forward to the New Zealand trip. I will take you with me. That is going to be rather cool. And the good thing about it, rather than how if I go to Europe or England or wherever, or... Well, not so much America these days, because commonly the Australian dollar is actually worth more than the American dollar, but not by much. Traditionally, for one Australian dollar, you've been able to get $1.20, $1.30, $1.40 New Zealand. I've seen it as high as $1.40. So the currency conversion, for once, is actually working in my direction. Now, they've already started. I've got off the westbound on-ramp. Sorry, westbound off-ramp. They just closed the eastbound on-ramp at Northern Road. So they're in the process of doing it tonight. So I've got lucky. So the currency in my favour is good. We're actually... by the time I get to Queenstown... People have said, now I'm not much of a skier, I haven't seen a lot of snow in my life, but people have said that the ski season and the resorts are, and the actual skiing is a lot better in New Zealand than what it is in Australia, some people have said. And some people have also said that it's actually cheaper. You might as well go to New Zealand to ski compared to going to our ski fields. I think the mountains are higher, there's more snow. Not that I'm a massive skier, go Ambos. Not that I'm a massive skier or anything, but it would be interesting to check out. So I'm going from Queensland, where the temperature should be roughly in the 20s or so. It's more tropical up there. Compared to here. And then I'm going to Auckland, which is not the warmest city in the world, but Queenstown, colder still. The flight instructor who took me on the simulator last time and took me to Queenstown on the simulator at Flight Experience was telling me that because it's such a difficult approach, you have to get special training and a special endorsement to actually fly into there. If you're a Qantas pilot, etc. So it's going to be an interesting landing. One of my trips will actually be on a Boeing 777, which I haven't been on. So that's going to be cool. And then there's a mixture of 737s and A320s. If I had flown out of Sydney and chosen to fly Emirates, for instance, they do run... And I think Etihad would be the same. I know Emirates, they run an A330 from Auckland, Sydney, and then over to Abu Dhabi and Dubai. So no A330 trip for me this time, but going from Brisbane to Auckland on a 777 will be cool. As I said, I've never done it before. It's going to be cool. Also coming up... In August, August 11, I'm having a concert for my birthday called Irkstock. If you've ever seen the movie Wayne's World 2, you'll know that Wayne had a dream where he wanted to put on a concert after seeing a dream with Jim Morrison and a naked African Native American. So I'm putting on Irkstock. At the moment, we have confirmed Foundry Road, Empirical, Gunner Tactic from the metal side of things, and then with the Hard Rock, Smoke and Mirrors, Vanity Riots, and Hard as Nails, waiting on news on Band 7. As we speak, that's going to be at the Valve Bar at Tempe on the 11th of August. I dare say this won't be the last time that I mention it, but I'm really looking forward to it, and a few of the people who have actually said that they are going to come has surprised me, because some of the people in the music scene that I hang around with, you know, I expected them to come, but some of my friends who are not into the music scene as much as I am, I didn't expect to come. And what I've done, I've put on the rock people first. The first three bands are rock at the moment, and then the next three are metal. So people who don't necessarily like metal or think they don't like metal, they can hang around for the first three. If they want to hang around for the metal, that's awesome, but if not, well, they can go home. But then we just get harder as the night goes on, and it's looking really, really, really good. My friend Jen is, she's a local as well. She's helping me out a lot with the promotion. She's doing the posters, organising them, and also speaking to the venue for me. So we're sort of sharing the workload. So that's awesome. Anywho, I'm Erk. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the episode. I'm back to work. Back to driving trains, which is absolutely awesome. So until next time, thank you for listening. ChannelErk.com. Good night, Interweb.